It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, to take your calls, your questions, figure out the scary world that we live in. I didn't even know, we talked earlier in the 9 o'clock hour about Ted Koppel's book, Lights Out, a cyber attack, a nation under, I want to say siege maybe, what does it say? A nation unprepared, surviving the aftermath. Scary book. It's number one in disaster relief. I didn't even know there's a disaster relief category on Amazon. The world's going to continue to get scarier. At least the media is going to keep getting scarier. We talked about in the 9 o'clock hour that one of my, this is not a far out on the limb prediction, but it's a prediction nonetheless, that of mine, that the financial media has got to get even more salacious than it already is. Trump has kind of made it political correctness even more correct, if you will. He's brought it into the light. And if the front runner can do it, so can anybody. So journalism and media in general, especially financial media, has got to get even crazier. It's got to get scarier and more potent. Like the superbugs that get stronger the longer they fight antibiotics, the media and the fear mongers are going to have to get even scarier and find new ways to put the fear of God into you. And the more the world gets used to that gloom, then the more doom they've got to pile on in order to make an impact or scratch the surface. So the business of peddling fear is a very real business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. Fear. And it's actually pretty easy to do. The world, to be an optimist, which is the camp that I'm in, the camp that a Warren Buffett has usually been in. By the way, his latest shareholder letter, if you would cherry pick his best line out of it, Buffett, quote, for 240 years, it's been a terrible mistake to bet against America, and now's no time to start. He's just always been an optimist, and he's, again, one of the richest guys in America, actually, I think number two in America. But it's hard to stay optimistic when there's a whole nother billion-dollar industry that's fear, and that's okay. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I love it. I love that there's a fear industry out there. If I were in the fear business, I think it'd be a good business to be in. It could take all the economic numbers, the symphony of data we get every day. We pull out the scariest numbers, and you really talk about, you focus in on those numbers and the potential of what could happen. And you sell newsletters, and you sell solutions to it, and you have a book on the disaster relief section of Amazon, and it does well, and it's fine. I think there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that's not the business that I'm in. That's not my mindset, and that's okay. And where are we going here? I'm on this tangent about the world. It has to do with, no matter how good things are, and the reason I'm so excited about this today is that no matter how good things are, you're still going to get, the media is still going to scare you. And you and I can use that to our advantage over the next decade. I think it's tough. I had a great call in the first hour from a millennial that echoed this same sentiment, is that, hey, as long as I've been alive, the market's been a crappy place to be and the economy kind of is so-so at best. And I worry about that generation. Maybe they're just completely jaded forever, and they're going to be locked out of thinking that America is a good place to invest, and they don't invest. And that's in over the next 20 and 30 years, America will be a better place, and it'll get better and a more efficient. And if you miss out on that, I don't know how you end up getting to financial freedom, or it's a lot more difficult. We know that in The Millionaire Next Door and hundreds of other studies show that if you want to get wealthy in America, and you want to have assets that'll sustain you when you stop working, you've got to have, or a big part of that, you don't have to, but a huge percentage of people that are in that position of financial stability and independence are investors. And they've got capital that now starts paying them when they stop working. in the way I see that is through dividends and through interest and through distributions. It's basically, how do you become an income investor? Well, you own companies that now pay you little by little by little every quarter or month or semi-annually. Whatever the payment structure is, if you've got a portfolio of 30 securities and they all pay on some schedule throughout the year, then you know if I have a portfolio yield of 3.5%, that for every $1 million I have invested, I've got 35 grand no matter what. Whether the price goes up or down or down or up, I still have my 3.5% income. If I want to be more aggressive on the income side and own a lot of utility companies that pay 4.5, then now I've got 45 grand per million that I get paid out, no matter what happens to the price. Provided these companies don't hit dramatic financial hardships, provided they don't go out of business, provided their businesses don't go decidedly backwards. And that's what makes investing challenging, is the income story, it sounds really easy and simple on the surface. Hey, I've got a dividend yield of 4% for my overall portfolio. I'm going to get that 4% through a combination of dividends and interest and distributions. And then over time, I can allow the principal to appreciate or fluctuate, but ultimately appreciate over time. That sounds pretty easy. But you've got to make sure the underlying securities don't materially go backwards. And that goes back to, you have to make sure that you own quality companies. You hear investment portfolio managers talk about fortress balance sheets, high quality. That means companies that aren't going away. We're talking about Buffett today. We'll stay on Buffett. He calls them cockroaches, companies that don't go away no matter what happens. They'll survive anything. A cockroach survives a cyber attack, a grid out, not water that's not clean. They survive anything. And you want companies to be able to do that same thing. And that's what a quality company should do. Strong balance sheet, diversified business, diversified revenue. They're not overly leveraged to the bank. They can easily cover their debt. And they're continuing to expand and grow in a very diversified way. So if one tributary of their revenue gets cut off, it doesn't dry up the stream. And there are plenty of companies around the world that are U.S. based and based around the world that do business in 50, 75, 100, 150 different countries. Those are companies that, guess what? They're not going away. Now, we will get to the phones here. 404-872-0750. You can also call me at 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ryan, do we go to the phones here or do I talk about the power of politics and stocks? I'm going to wait for that. So coming up, we're going to talk about, because we're in the middle of this political season, there's been 11-some debates, 30-some primaries. There's just gigantic political headlines going on. And there is something, though, even more powerful that's happening very quietly, almost behind closed doors, and that's lobbying. That's the power of money in Washington. It's where Washington and Wall Street really come together. And it's very impactful when it comes to companies. And I want to talk about that. There's a fascinating study that I've been following for several years now. And I'm finally kind of starting to talk about it. And we'll talk about that here on Money Matters. So stay tuned for that part of the show. If you want to know more about it, of course you can always find me and email me. But I want to get to the phones here. Let's see, Ryan, where are we going again? I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention when you were giving me the signals through the glass. We're going to line six, which is Ron in Gainesville. Ron, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Thanks, Wes, for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
My wife and I have a Vanguard brokerage account that 97% of it is preferred stocks, and there's like 32 issues total. But three.
What?
Yeah, total.
I was trying to sound a little bit like Clark Howard there.
Oh no!
What? You're crazy! No, wait a minute. Wait. So you have all? Is this one of many accounts you have, or is most of your net worth just in these?
No. This is just one of several accounts.
Got it.
It's a Vanguard brokerage account, and it has 97% of it is preferred stocks. Three of those issues consist of 15% of the total, and those two are giving me worries. It's the Barclays. We have two Barclays and a Deutsche Bank. The thing is that they're paying between 7.5.
Sounds like a poker game. I got two Barclays and a Deutsche Bank, and I'll raise you one.
Yeah.
So what about, okay, so...
So I've been hearing, you know, alarming things about both of them, that, you know, they're in real trouble, and there's talk of them suspending dividends, and of course that's why you're in this, for dividends.
Yeah.
They're between 7.5 and 8.1, so that...
Which we know happens. We remember the financial crisis.
Right.
There were tons of preferreds that... And there were a lot of different outcomes, but many of the outcomes were that they no longer paid, and they dropped precipitously in value.
Correct.
Because they stopped paying. So
correct.
That's what you're worried about happening again.
Correct.
Okay.
And I've been advised, you know, we've, you know, talked back and forth, and, you know, we're reading various articles, and they said, you know, you probably got to get rid of those. The two Barclays, as of Friday, were trading over par, but the Deutsche Bank was just under par. But, you know, I've been... You know, folks that I've talked to have said, just get rid of those two. Just get rid of them before you lose everything. And they suspend their dividends, and your, as you said, the value will drop precipitously, and you're...
Well, here's my thought, though, Ron. So, first of all, for everyone listening, what Ron's asking about, preferred securities are very much like long-term bonds. They're bonds with very long-term horizons. Some are perpetual, meaning they don't even have a maturity. They go on technically forever. But they have a really high rate in order to take on that risk, because there's interest rate risk here, right?
Right.
So if we have if interest rates stay low and they stay under 2.5% on the 10-year treasury, then these are going to be fine. Now, preferreds in general will be fine. Yes, you always have to worry about the underlying credit quality and the ability for them to continue to pay interest. And if you've got a Deutsche Bank that goes under, which there was worry about that a couple weeks ago, that because there are too many loans to too many, let's say, energy companies around the world, then yeah, you got a problem. Mm. So you got to be careful, just like any bond you would own or any individual company, you've got to be really careful about their credit quality and their balance sheet. But remember that these preferreds, they're in general, just because they pay 6%, they're not a silver bullet. I think preferreds in general are fine for today, but you've got to be ready for rates to go up. And interest rates go up, prices will go down precipitously just because of the rate, Ron. Not the underlying quality, just because of interest rates going up, easily 10 to 20% losses in price. So just be aware of that. I don't think that's coming anytime soon. And I think, to your point, why take all this worry and risk when there are plenty of other preferreds that are par value? You haven't lost any money yet in these. Why take on the risk that something happens to these individual companies when you can get 5.5-6% from a diversified preferred ETF, for that matter,
right,
as opposed to having 15-20% of your portfolio in one particular name. All right, we got to go to quick news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here, straight ahead on WSB.
Work News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
So the political season, good morning, welcome back to Money Matters. The political season, of course, 11 debates, which have been... I've a couple of times sat down to watch one of my new, actually probably the best show, I think, new show this year on television. It's actually a Showtime production. It's called Billions. It's about Paul Giamatti's in it. He's a U.S. District Attorney, and he's after this hedge fund manager, Axe Capital. Really good show. And I sat down to try to watch an episode of that, and the debate was on, and it was so good, I could not watch the debate. And my 9-year-old, who, at this was, I guess this was Wednesday or Thursday night, for some reason he couldn't go to sleep. So he came downstairs, and he couldn't stop watching the debate. And he kept laughing. He thought, it's so funny to see the reaction of a child, just a kid, little kid, watching a debate. He didn't really know what they're talking about all that much. But to see how they judge on who wins or who doesn't win, and he just kept saying, wow, that Mr. Donald Trump guy, he's really winning the debate, Dad. He's really the best out there. And then he was kind of, and then when Ted Cruz started talking, he's making fun of Ted Cruz because, I don't know, maybe just the way he talked, but it's amazing to see the reaction of a child on who wins these debates or who doesn't. So I want to talk about that linkage between not children and politics, but Wall Street and politics, and what lobbying dollars could really does, and what it has done historically how companies take advantage of Washington. We're going to talk about that straight ahead. First, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Your phone calls, questions, you name it, 404-872-0750. What's our theme? It's always about income investing, underlying, because that's the one thing that we can have it that's relatively predictable. There's nothing completely predictable in the world that we live in. But if you're an investor, and I'll give these two examples that I talk very often about with in the real world when I meet with families. You can make money two ways. You've got, you want your $10 to grow to 20. And that's, I think, traditionally how we think about investing. I buy something for 10, I want it to appreciate to 20. 10 grows to 11, then 12, then 13, and 14. So the 10 grows to 20 over 10 years. Or my $10 pays me a dollar, and I have 11. Then it pays me another dollar, and I have 12, and another. And that happens mechanically over 10 years, and my 10 now, I have $20. I've gotten from 10 to 22 completely different ways, but I've arrived at the same result. 10 goes to 20. The latter example is an example of income production, and there's more predictability to that. It's not necessarily an easier way to do it. It's not necessarily a better way to do it. It's just a different way to approach investing, and it's even more important as you get into your mid to later 50s and into your 60s when you've stopped working and now your assets have to now produce something steady for you, yet we're investing in an otherwise unsteady world. So trying to enter in some predictability. That's why I believe that the income side of investing, the income part of investing, is such an important philosophy to understand and utilize over time. Let's talk a little bit about politics though. So I've talked about this briefly throughout the day, and we're in the middle of this gigantically headline-grabbing GOP race, right? So the Democratic side, that's over. There's one word for that. It's going to be Hillary. It's a matter of who does she run against. And there's a lot. There's obviously, it's Trump. Is it Cruz? Is it Trump Kasich? Do they team up? Who knows what exactly will happen? But the headlines aren't going away. And we're going to see this for the next year, almost a year. But beyond the big headlines, the powerful, what's really happening, I think that's most powerful, that's a lot quieter and behind closed doors, and that's all the lobbying efforts that companies do in Washington. And I've been researching this. Over the past 4 years alone, companies have spent, and I looked this, and there's a lot of different sectors, and you can find out the industries that lobby the most, the companies that lobby the most, but let's just call it cumulatively over the last 4 years. My math here is that companies have spent over $12 billion, over $12 billion on lobbying in Washington. There's over 11,000 lobbyists in Washington. Couple examples, and I'm just looking at 2015, a couple of companies that you'll know. AT&T spent over $16 million in lobbying. Google/Alphabet spent $16.5 million lobbying. Lockheed Martin, $13.7 million lobbying. FedEx, $12.4 million lobbying. This is all on Open Secrets, which is the website that tracks lobbying activity. It's legal. It's part of the system. It's part of the just way Washington works. It's. But if you really think about the power in the lobby, is that this is where Washington and Wall Street really come together. Now, there's a fascinating study that I've been following for several years now. Haven't talked about it on air, but I just began to talk a little bit about it last week, and I'll talk a little bit more about it today. And the study shows that companies with the highest lobbying intensity, so we'll call it intensity. What does intensity mean? Well, of course, money spent. That's one part of it. It's not everything, but that's part of it. How much money an organization, a trade group, or a company spends, and the trade groups, who are they spending the money on, or what are they trying to influence for what particular companies? Of course, the company size, so it matters on how big the company is, because number three is the potential impact. Here's another part of this intensity word, the potential impact on profits through lobbying. And then there's other, of course, there's other factors to this. So, but interestingly, really fascinatingly, as a group, if you look at, if you were to track companies as a group over time that have done this well, or let's say the most intense way, if you look at this, and again, I look through investment strategies all the time, and I've heard a million versions of how to do well relative to the market, and most of them, well, let's call it 99% of them don't really hold up over time. But this one, interestingly, at least from this study that I've seen and studied, that this is one of the few isolated strategies that actually does even better than the rest of the market. At least it has over the last 10 years. So it does better than the general market or the S&P 500, which to me is fascinating. And it's actually fairly common sense. You follow the DC money train and you'll find profits. It's pretty simple. So I'm not going to expend a whole lot of time on the exact nuts and bolts here on the show, but happy to, of course, dive into this further if you would like. And of course, you can always find me on yourwealth.com and email me. My email is there. Or you can email me radio@yourwealth.com. Or just go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. And then there's a contact button right there on the page. Let's go to the phones, though, Ryan Ely. And we have a prize pack coming up, too, don't we? So we have a trivia prize pack that Ryan is conjuring up right now. And we're going to go to the phones first. We're going to John, who joins us in Kennesaw. John, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Good morning. I want to start a college savings account for an eight-month-old grandchild, and I was interested in getting your recommendations and ideas on 529, if that's what should be used, or just how aggressive or possible specific things to maybe invest in.
You're a good granddad, John. I've got to really get that going, too. I've got four kids now, man. And we just had one 3 weeks ago, my fourth boy, and it's almost, I know how it is as a parent, it's overwhelming, especially when you've got more than a few kids, and you start thinking about 25, 50 grand per kid per year for all, just, it's an enormous number. So get started early, and your wonderful grandfather to be doing that. We always talk about the 529 plan, that's a pretty common way to do this, and I think it's a good way to do it. So Georgia, you and I, we live here in Georgia, just use the Georgia plan. So Path 2, the number 2, College 529 is the website. It's the Georgia version. And then within the Georgia version, they have these age bracketed plans. So somebody who's from a newborn to 3 years, which then it migrates from age 4 to 6, and it gives you some different iterations of age-based plans. And all they're doing in those plans, John, is they're adjusting the allocation a little bit. So when someone's really young, like your grandchild's case, it's going to be a 100% stock portfolio, mostly stocks. To your question, should you do this? Should you be aggressive? The answer is yes. Because they're not going to school for another 18 years, then absolutely. You want to have, in my opinion, you want to have a 100% equity or stock portfolio. And then it is important, though, and that's why I like these age-weighted plans. If you do kind of set it and forget it and you don't think about it, by the time they get to be 15, 16, what's happened to that age-weighted plan, kind of like a target retirement fund, they get more and more conservative. I remember back in 06, 07, 08, families thought there was this misnomer, I think, that happened that because it's in a 529 plan, for some reason it's safer and it's less exposed to the market. That's utterly not true. It's everything depends upon how it's invested within the 529 plan. It could be a money market or bond account, or it could be an all stock or emerging market account. It just because it's in a 529 plan doesn't mean it's just safe. It has to be invested appropriately. But today, because you have time, I would be aggressive. Just make sure that when they're 15 or 16, it's gotten to the point where it's more conservative. Because what happened in 07-08, families thought their 529 plans were, quote, safe or secure. Market crashed. they were in 100% stocks, and those 529 accounts might have been 100 grand, and now they turned into 50 grand. That's a problem.
Can you advise a little bit on what the advantages or disadvantages of a 529 might be? Can it be used for anything else? Or you?
Well, so on the surface, and these are good plans, the advantages weigh out the detractions, and the advantages are you put money in, it grows tax deferred, it comes out tax free, used for education. So you put in 50 grand, it grows to 100. The whole 100, if used for school, educational purposes, it's going to come out tax-free. So those are a couple big advantages. The worry I see parents and grandparents have for 529 plans is, hey, wait a minute, what if my kid doesn't go to school? Well, the first thought is that if little Johnny doesn't go to college, then you can transfer the beneficiary of the money to anybody else. So it can go to little Susie in case she goes to school. And it can continue to go down the line to whoever you want to change the beneficiary to. So chances are somebody in the family is going to use it and get the tax-free status. What if my kids get scholarships? Well, number one, the chances of that are slim to none. And I think none's in the lead. Number one. Number two, not the kids won't, but that's not a strategy. That's a bonus. But if, let's say, everybody gets on scholarship, then the worst case scenario is you pull the money out and there's a 10% penalty on the growth of the account. There's a ratio and then it's a 10% penalty assessed. So it's not the worst outcome in the world. It's taxed and you have a 10% penalty. So again, just on the growth. So you're still going to get your money back and you're still going to have that tax deferred compounding, which is obviously an advantage, even if nobody in the family ever uses it. And over the many years I've been doing this, rarely have I ever seen a family not end up finding a way to use that 529 or educational money. The other thought here, and John, thanks for the call. The other thought is that just a good old fashioned after tax account isn't a bad way to do it either. A low cost ETF or a couple of individual companies that grow without a lot of turnover over time is another tax efficient way to save for college. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a 529 plan. Ryan, we'll do trivia prize back as soon as we're back from quick news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters straight ahead.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. It is a beautiful day today. 10 on the Mellish meter. High 64. Tomorrow looks like it's maybe even just as nice. So tune in to Atlanta Morning News, WSB Radio throughout the day for Kirk Mellish and his forecast. Brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Air. Hey, guess what? It's a trivia prize pack time. Ryan Ealy, talk to me.
The McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack is a family four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Atlanta Gladiators game at the Infinite Energy Center, a four-pack of tickets to the 34th annual Atlanta International Car Show, March 9th through the 13th at the Georgia World Congress Center, and a pair of tickets to see Def Leppard in concert on August 12th at Lakewood Amphitheater, produced by Live Nation.
Def Leppard's still around, huh?
I think so.
Wow.
Apparently.
Yeah. This guy's got to be like 60.
And they're still rocking.
Black leather pants.
It's unbelievable. This is a great prize pack. The trivia question. Can you tell me, according to a research report, the Huron Report, what city last year surpassed New York to hold the most billionaires? They added 32 new billionaires. This city surpassed New York as the city with the most in the world. I can tell you, here's a hint, it's not Moscow, which actually lost 7 billionaires. A lot of energy-related pain there.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. You know, it's funny, I posted something on our Facebook page about a Russian billionaire's, inside a Russian billionaire's yacht. $300 million lot. Melnichenko, I believe his name, Alex something Melnichenko. But he made his money in materials and coal and banking inside of Russia and became a billionaire. The guy's only like 38, 39. Anyway, he's got 300 $300 million yacht. Anyway.
What have you accomplished, Wes?
Right. What are we doing, Ryan?
What are we doing here?
So we've committed to making Facebook, our Wes Moss Money Matters Facebook page, just a heck of a lot better. A heck of a lot more interesting. And not just the nuts and bolts of finance, but going back to what we're doing this for in the first place. Why are we saving? Why are we pounding away every day inside of our 401ks to try to get to retirement to be able to stop working and then do something with it? Why are we spending it? Why are we saving it? What are we going to be doing with it? So the things we're aspiring for our money to do. So that'll be on Wes Moss Money Matters Facebook page. Enjoy the rest of this Sunday, the trivia question on Twitter and Facebook, the answer, of course, and enjoy the rest of this beautiful Sunday news, weather, traffic, and then Atlanta Morning News.